Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
Hi, this is Dave Cornelison, and you are listening to the web version of STEM Spots. With me in the studio today is Lauren Bullard. He's with the James River Basin Partnership and is here to talk about water conservation efforts and some other interesting tidbits. Thanks for stopping by, Lauren.
Thank you.
Lauren, give us a little bit about your background and interest. You've been around here for quite a while, and you're interested in water, but talk about how that came about and what that actually is.
Well, I've been interested in water, I guess, clear back when I was a kid. Spent a lot of time canoeing on Missouri streams and fishing in the streams, and became very interested in making sure that, the streams that are clean, especially those here in the Ozarks, stayed that way. Even in my career, I went to work for the Watershed Committee of the Ozarks in the 1980s. I was a director there for 23 years. And that organization is about keeping water, lakes and rivers and streams, the water in those clean for the purposes of drinking water for the city of Springfield. So all of my professional career and most of my recreational interests all revolve around clean water.
And so now you are also interested in another society, the Ozark Society. Tell us a little bit about that. It's been around for a while. It has a history, and it sort of came about for a focused purpose. So just sort of run us through that whole background.
Yes, it's been well over 50 years now. Back in 1962, Dr. Neil Compton down in Arkansas became very concerned about the plans to build a dam on the Buffalo River. A lot of folks down in Arkansas had floated on that river for years, and of course, it's a very magnificent, beautiful place. And Dr. Compton found out about a meeting that was going to be held in Marshall related to the dam. His group of concerned citizens were kind of left unaware of these meetings, and they felt like they were being kind of railroaded on the thing. And so they raised a big stink about it, got the state senators and legislators involved, took them on a float trip to show them how beautiful the river was, organized a lot of folks around the idea that this river was too magnificent and beautiful to dam. And so finally they won the day. They stopped the dam. And they've been going strong ever since. They've taken on a lot of other issues in the years since then. And there's chapters now of the Ozark Society in Arkansas, in Missouri, and even down in Louisiana.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that whole broad interest that they had and people's own perceptions about water in the Ozarks. So I'm from Arizona. My family's from Missouri, but I only came back here in the summers. And so when you come back to a place like this that has 48 inches of rain a year or something like that, you get this idea of, oh, water's really abundant here and water's just everywhere. But what kinds of things do people have to really be concerned about? So when they wanted to dam the river, presumably that was done for what? Were they interested in hydroelectric? Were they interested in flood control? Was it water management? And when you look at these kinds of issues and you think about contaminating things, what kinds of ways do they get contaminated? What kinds of major problems are there that we face in this area?
Well, there's a lot of questions there.
You can answer however you feel, however you see fit.
Well, let's start with the dams. This was a core project. I think that probably back in that day, of the Buffalo River Dam project, it was a lot about flooding control. And we've learned a lot since then about flood management, and we don't always necessarily have to have dams to take care of some of those things. But probably hydropower was another issue as well. And those are still with us. I mean, we have a lot of dams in Missouri too, but the fact that we have a lot of water is pretty obvious, but there's a couple of things there. One, we still have occasional droughts, and so there are many years, including the early 50s in the Ozarks, where there was hardly any flow in any of the rivers, and the lake levels dropped, and there was a lot of concern about even having enough water for drinking water. So we're not immune to drought problems here. The other thing is that we've seen changes in quality, and that's raised a lot of concerns from citizens about taking care of these high-quality resources that we have. And particularly here in southwest Missouri and in the Ozarks, our streams are very scenic and they're very clean for the most part. And so people really identify with those resources and they use them. And there's a lot of folks that float and fish and recreate in those clean waters. And so I think there's been a constituency for many years here to make sure that we don't lose those. And so any efforts that are directed in that way, whether it's through organizations like the Watershed Committee or the James River Basin Partnership, or citizens getting involved in things like dealing with these confined animal operations that were of recent concern on the buffalo, you know, it seems to me that we've built a pretty strong constituency here for clean water.
So let's talk about the Ozark Society's local chapter. So there's a particular chapter, which I think was called the Schoolcraft Chapter, and it was in existence and perhaps isn't now, and you're interested in that. But tell us a little bit about Schoolcraft, the chapter's history, and what's going on with that now.
Well, Schoolcraft, Henry Rowe Schoolcraft, was a sort of an early explorer, I guess you'd say, in the Ozarks. He did a tour in 1818 and 1819. And right outside of Springfield was the closest that he came to where we're sitting right now. There was a lead smelter there, and he was interested in lead primarily, and did this tour from Potosi, which was a sort of a lead mining area in the early part of the 1800s in Missouri. And that was who the chapter was named after. He wrote this journal, A Tour in the Ozarks, and he described a lot of the waters that he saw, and he was amazed at how clear they were. He talked about jumping his horse into water that he thought was only a couple of feet deep, and it ended up being, you know, above his head because he just couldn't judge it. It was so transparent. So Schoolcraft sort of made known to the outside world some of the really beautiful waters that we have here in the Ozarks. And so I think it was appropriate that our chapter was named for him. And the chapter was going pretty strong when I moved to Springfield in 1975, moved back here. I lived here when I was in grade school, but moved back in 75. That was the first organization that I got involved with. And at that time, we were looking at public land management more and trying to get some areas established as wilderness areas, looking at roadless areas within the national forest that might be eligible for inclusion as wilderness. So we'd moved on. The organization had kind of moved from fighting dams to then managing these public lands.
Right. But the chapter slowly lost its footing, and now you're interested in reestablishing it. Is that correct?
That's correct. I think, you know, there's probably a lot of reasons that some of the prime movers, the folks that were really involved, left the area or went on to other work where they couldn't be as involved. You know, there's a lot of reasons probably that it kind of faded. But I think there's a renewed interest. There's even been a renewed interest in issues like the one affecting the Buffalo River fairly recently. There was a large hog operation along Big Creek, which is a major tributary of the Buffalo River. It's outside the park boundaries, outside the Buffalo National River Park. But there was monitoring done that indicated this hog operation was, in fact, polluting the Big Creek and probably the Buffalo River. That since then, that hog operation has been shut down. The state of Arkansas bought the land, and there's at least temporarily a moratorium on new hog operations in the Buffalo River watershed. There was a big citizen outcry when people found out what was going on with the hog operation, and the Ozark Society, at least down in Arkansas, was very involved in that effort. So I think the point to be made is that we saved the corridor along the river, the Buffalo River, as a national park, but we really didn't save the watershed. We didn't really pay enough attention to what was going on in areas that contributed flow to the buffalo. And that's the kind of thing I think this local chapter maybe can pay more attention to, those kinds of issues that are going on up here in Missouri, in southwest Missouri, as well as in the Ozarks in general.
So when you think about those kinds of things, and you've got this watershed issue where now you need to pay more attention to things that happen not on the river itself but in other places, how much role does the science part play, and who's going to do that? And then how much role is there in policy? And is the policy driven primarily by economic concerns? It seems like that most of the time you make arguments about environmental issues. The pushback typically is an economic pushback. So will the society involve itself in talking to politicians, or how does that how will that all work?
Well, I think it does, and I'll start with the economic factors to begin with. You look at the revenue generated just by the Buffalo National River in terms of the number of people that go there and float, go there on a spring weekend, and if you haven't gone, and on a beautiful day in May, float the Upper Buffalo, and you'll see for yourself how many people love that river and how many people go there and use it. It's a huge economic driver, just like our lakes here in southwest Missouri. Table Rock Lake is a huge economic driver. The James River is a huge economic driver. We tend to forget the value of those resources to our economy as well as our way of life. And so I think that's always a factor, but there's more at play than just the economics of the situation. The Buffalo was our first national river. There's a reason for that, and the reason is people love it, and people don't want to see it spoiled. They don't want to see it degraded, and that's the way I feel about our water resources in southwest Missouri here, too. We've got something that's great, and we don't want to lose it. We've got to pay attention to what's going on. If that means writing letters to elected representatives, so be it. I mean, I think that, at some point there's an intersection with politics. Not that you have to get political necessarily, but you do have to be involved. You've got to be out there doing things. And I think that's what I see as a major role for this chapter of the Ozark Society, is to get involved, get people writing letters, calling their elected representatives when there's an issue that needs to be addressed, going to public meetings, going to meetings in Jeff City, meeting with the Clean Water Commission. I mean, there are endless numbers of things that we could and should be doing to make sure that we're paying close attention to what's going on, and that we're able to influence policy and influence decisions early in the process wherever we can to make sure those resources get protected.
So what kind of membership would you like to see? Is this anybody in town or anybody in the region that just has a passion about these issues could be a member of this chapter? How does that work?
I don't put any bounds on it, and I don't think there needs to be. The focus of the organization is the Ozarks, and that will be the focus of the chapter. But I have friends in Seattle who are already members of this organization, and they want to be a member of the chapter as well. I have friends in other parts of the country who are very interested in this because they have roots here. They have roots in the Ozarks. So I don't think there's any need to limit this. I've had interest from the Joplin area. Andy Ostmeyer down there just did an article that came out this past weekend in the Joplin Globe about the Ozark Society and the history of it and why we need it. And he made some very good points early in that article about why we need this. He's experienced these situations where citizens assumed that their legislators and assumed like their regulators and public agencies were going to take care of things for them and they don't need to worry about it. So we now know that's not true necessarily. There are interests that are always behind the scenes trying to work to get economic advantages, getting regulations rolled back or whatever it is that are undermining our protections for these resources. And we have to be constantly vigilant, constantly aware of what those things are that are going on.
Well, Lorien, I really appreciate you stopping by and talking to us about this issue today.
Thanks
for coming by. And I will have a contact URL on the website if you're listening to the show so that you can look into the Ozark Society and what they do. And once again, this is Dave Cornelison for the webcast version of STEM Spots, signing off.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.